It's May 24th, 2016. My name is Kevin Mahoney. I'm the editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Welcome to Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Coop podcast. Each week, we check in with our Capitol correspondent, Sean Kitchen, on the good, the bad, and the ugly that is Harrisburg, PA. Raging Chicken Radio is a project of Raging Chicken Press. Check out all our citizen journalism at ragingchickenpress.org, and you can subscribe to Raging Chicken Radio on Podbean, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and iTunes. Subscribing to Raging Chicken Radio is one of the easiest things you can do to help support this podcast and all the work we do with Raging Chicken. If you want to help build a progressive activist media network for PA and beyond, you can become a member for as little as $2 a month. That's a drop, folks, a drop in the cost, $2 a month. That's less than the cost of a beer or a cup of coffee. Go to ragingchickenpress.org and click Become a Member under the Support and Membership tab. Or if you're listening on Podbean, just click Become a Patron and you'll be on your way. Be sure to check out all the thank you gifts for each membership level while you're there. Everything from thank you cards to t-shirts, folks. In addition to today's episodes of Out the Coop, we will be releasing our second edition of our interview series, The Sit Down. Last week, we spoke to Steve Horn, an investigative journalist for the Smog Blog. And this week, I talk with Amy Lynch Beniak, a professor of composition and rhetoric at Kutztown University, about contingent labor in higher education and the Indianapolis Resolution, an attempt to urge professional organizations to get behind equitable labor relations. All right, so it is another Tuesday in this presidential election season, but for the first time in a long time, we do not have a primary or a caucus. Woohoo! A little shaking things up. Makes me feel a little weird, I have to admit. The next contests come June 4th in the Virgin Islands, June 5th in Puerto Rico, and the big day on June 7th. And that's where we get California with its like 548 delegates, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, North Dakota, and South Dakota. They all have their primaries or caucuses on that day. That's going to be the kind of the last super type Tuesday of the season. And then D.C., of course, will close out the season on June 14th. Now, California is, of course, that big kahuna, like I said, with its 548 delegates at stake. We'll see what happens. It might be just the kind of the end of that whole campaign for Bernie Sanders. But, you know, I'll tell you, just because there's no primaries doesn't mean that there's no news, because we got some breaking news last night, big news about the Democratic Platform Committee and Bernie Sanders. And we'll get into that in our first segment today. And plus, we're going to talk about the devastating assault on public education in Erie, PA, and around the state. Erie may close all four of its high schools because they're out of cash, and we'll get into that in the second segment. And also, Sean's going to talk to us a little bit about the shakeup that just took place in the Wolf administration, particularly with the Department of Environmental Protection. So we'll get there. So lots to get to today. That's it's going to be a big day here on the podcast. But for now, it is my pleasure to welcome Sean Kitchen back to the podcast once again. Sean, how the hell are you?
I'm doing great. I'm awesome right now.
You're awesome right now. What accounts for you being awesome right now?
I don't know. Just feeling great this morning. Glad you're recording.
Glad you're recording. So, I heard you had a great breakfast this morning. From that's what I understand.
Yes, and I had a great dessert last night.
Yeah. Well, how was George Costanza Monday, by the way? For those people who don't know, Sean makes it a routine on Mondays to go to work with his sweatpants on, and
I actually wore regular black straight shorts yesterday.
Straight shorts. So you didn't do the
I've given up on. It was a little hot out, and I was, Mondays are a day where I'm usually like running food around. So
I just love the sweatpants Monday, though, I have to say. You know, it's the kind of like announcing to the world that you've given up.
Yeah.
So anyway, big news last night in the both for the Bernie Sanders campaign and potentially for Democrats. What's going on, Sean?
It looks like, we're starting to obviously see the Sanders campaign shift. I think that they know their time is running out with the campaign. They're still fighting. Some of their true believers don't want to hear that. But something that happened last night, the Democratic Platform Committee was announced. Mm-hmm. And I saw some names on there I think everyone should be happy of. Bill McKibben, Cornel West, Keith Ellison, And there was a couple more.
So those for Keith Ellison, right? I mean, Keith Ellison was the one guy in Congress, right, that actually predicted that Donald Trump was going to be the potential front runner. I mean, this guy's been at the forefront of progressive politics for a long time now. And, you know, Bill McKibben, of course, you know, the founder of 350.org. I mean, he's one of the strongest voices on, environmental action.
Bill McKibben is like, it's awesome seeing that. I've had the pleasure to meet McKibben a couple of times. But he's someone I've been reading since I was in grade school or like in high school. Like he's always been like one of those environmental heroes. It's someone you get to meet in person, get to see him speak a bunch of times, and then see what he's done with 350.org and the climate change movement and the environmental movement. And he's been talking about this stuff for 30, 40 years now, or at least 20 to 30 years now. And it's great seeing him being where he is at, given that he never intended to become an activist. He always wanted to be an intellectual and scientists talking about what's happening. And he said, enough is enough. I got to get involved in this. I got to change the game. And he's done that.
I think it's absolutely incredible. And, you know, it's funny you should say that, you know, so you've been reading for a long time because Cornel West was along with Bell Hooks and Angela Davis. I mean, they were pretty much my introductions to class and race politics in the U.S. I mean, I was reading their stuff back in college, you know, so and to see Cornel West of all people as, you know, on that list too as well was incredible. And then, you know, then we also got James Zogby, right? James Zogby is the president of the Arab American Institute in DC, right? Done amazing work. And I've got a little tidbit on him in a minute. And then Deborah Parker, a Native American activist. You can have a Native American activist that is actually going to be on the Democratic Platform Committee. I mean, you know, and I have to say, in addition to that, the announcements from Bernie Sanders, and those are all Bernie Sanders picks.
And these aren't people who are just going to sit there and take it. These are people who will be leading the discussion, and they will most certainly make their voices heard in these discussions. So they might be outnumbered in there because of the way it's broken up. I don't know how it's breaking, like who gets, if it's a 50-50 split with the committee, but Sanders put five people there. Three of them we know are going to make their voices heard. McKibben's going to speak up. You know Cornel West is going to speak up. And you know Keith Ellison's going to say what he's going to say. And they're not going to back down from that either. And that's what I like about these picks.
No, and absolutely. And I have to say, so it's not 50-50. Ultimately, it's about, you know, that's about a third of the committee. But check this out. I mean, so here's the rest of the committee, right? Clinton had her picks. I think they split it 5-6 or something like that. So Clinton has Wendy Sherman. She's a former State Department official under Clinton, right? So there's your insider, right? Someone close to Clinton, which you'd expect. Neera Tanden, she's a former aide and president of the Center for American Progress, right? You've got Ohio State Rep Alicia Reese, right? Phenomenal, right? I mean, she's been great. Luis Gutierrez, congressman from Illinois, and former White House environmental advisor Carol Browner and Paul Booth, a union leader, right? So even, you know, Clinton's picks are strong picks, right? Yes, they're a little bit more kind of insider on that, but these are some strong voices. Now, the third round of picks came from Debbie Wasserman Schultz, right? And now Debbie Wasserman Schultz, of course, is under all sorts of fire because progressives want her out for what she did to Bernie Sanders this time around. But listen to who she picked, right? So she's got Elijah Cummings, right? Elijah Cummings has been loud, right? And constant, especially in congressional hearings. That guy has held people's feet to the fire one after another. So that was a surprise pick, for at least for me. But Elijah Cummings, you know, I mean, he's been around. He kind of knows how to move stuff. You also got Barbara Lee of Oakland. I mean, Barbara Lee, the sole voice to vote against the Iraq War, right? Also an African-American woman. Howard Berman, right? Former California congressman, and Bonnie Schaefer, business executive and philanthropist. So if you put now, the reason I read those things out is you put those things in context with Bernie Sanders' picks, you can see lines of coalitions, right? Where, you know, it's not just going to be Bill McKibben, for example, you know, shouting at the top of his lungs, right? I mean, that's not what he does all the time. I mean, he's very, very good on policy. He's very good in kind of negotiating. But you've got other people even on that committee that I think are going to be sympathetic to some of those things.
And one of the things that I think that someone like Bill McKibben, with him being on there, the 350.org movement has actively pushed the message that they're with Black Lives Matter. That right. Climate change is also a racial, it's also part of racial injustice. And even when I've seen him speak in Philadelphia, either at like a book signing, he's or at any in DC or New York City. He's always had people from the black clergy speaking, you know, up and coming priests or up and coming clergy members about the environmental issues that are happening and how it's actually a racial injustice too, to start like framing that way to get more people involved with it and say, hey, this is happening. Why is that oil refinery right next to you? Why is that pipeline going through your neighborhood? Why is that highway cutting your neighborhood in half? Why are these artificial boundaries and borders going up?
Absolutely. And I would say that, you know, this is where, you know, I think Cornel West has a similar kind of background. I mean, of course, like kind of racial justice and social justice has been kind of right at the forefront. I mean, like Cornel West, right, was a guy who was, you know,
And he's not afraid to speak his mind.
No, I mean, but he's also, you know, he's a guy who's been actively involved in Democratic Socialists of America, too, as well, for as long as I can remember. Right. I mean, when I used to go to some of these conferences and things like this, he'd be there as part of one of the representatives. And he's also someone who is as strong on race and class and environment as anybody out there. You know, and he's got that kind of, you know, that kind of religious background too as well, which taps into all sorts of kind of communities. So that's really interesting.
Keith and, you know, Ellison,
oh my God.
The only Muslim to serve in the legislature, you know, and he's proud of he's proud being a Muslim.
Yep.
A follower of Islam. And he is there. And he's also another person that's awesome on race inequality. And hey, he protected Donald Trump.
No, exactly. And I think, you know, Keith Ellison is also, you know, again, if you're talking about, you know, because, you know, Americans are going nuts over all this kind of Muslim stuff, especially folks on the right. You know, the fact is that, you know, I mean, frankly, Hillary Clinton has been arguing this for a long time. He's like, you know, look, and, you know, Barack Obama has too. He's like, look, you want, you know, we recognize that there's a kind of a radicalizing kind of like right wing element to what we see in Islam, this kind of radical Islam. Right. But there is in every religion, number one. Right. But the, you know, they're Clinton and Obama have both said, you know, look, I mean, if you want to combat that, you actually have to kind of look at, you know, the vast majority of Muslims in this country and across the world, right, are not these extremists. And Keith Ellison is, and what a better spokesperson to be there. So, and John Zogby, now I'll tell you, this has already got some people really concerned, because I'll give you this for example.
Because he supports the creation of a Palestinian state, or he's a supporter of the two-state solution.
Right. And it's not just him, right? I mean, so basically you've got, you know, I'll give you the headline from the Washington Post today. It says, Sander wins greater say in Democratic platform, names pro-Palestinian activist. Okay. So, and that headline was not exclusive to the Washington Post. You saw this over and over again, right? So, already you can see, you know, the Israeli lobby has already got their eyes on some of these picks, because to get those kind of headlines right out front, instead of being like, you know, names, you know, out leader in environmental justice movement, right? Instead of that, we get this thing about pro-Palestinian activists. And yes, they're pointing to Keith Ellison, but they're also really kind of targeting James Zogby. And James Zogby is, you know, the head of the Arab American Institute. And a little story about him. When I moved to Washington, D.C., I lived in Washington, D.C. for 3 years. After I finished my all my coursework for my PhD and stuff, I moved to D.C. to live there and kind of teach and stuff. He was the first meeting I ever had with someone like an official person in D.C. just to kind of say, you know, kind of get the lay of the land of what was going on in the district and kind of looking for job possibilities and so on. And the reason that he was my first person is that he's from my hometown, Utica, New York. And you know, his brother, right? His brother, I think it's John. Yeah, John Zogby runs the kind of a Zogby polling, right? Folks, this is kind of like a really influential family. And what's interesting is that they're targeting him as a pro-Palestinian activist. But, you know, this guy is, you know, he's not, you know, he grew up, he's Lebanese, right? And he grew up in this kind of Lebanese Catholic kind of environment, right? And he's been, you know, on the ground working on issues of kind of justice and kind of representation of Arab American community for a long time. So he's a really interesting insider pick too, as well. So, you know, this is, you know, who knows where this is going to go, but I'm excited about it.
No, and I'm glad to see that this issue is finally being addressed. You know, Sanders had the fortitude to put someone who's a Palestinian who sympathizes mm-hmm. with the state the creation of the Palestinian state. Mm-hmm. Because there are a lot of – because that is a third rail within Democratic politics.
No, that's right.
I think we need to have an intellectual debate about that. And I think that I think that the BDS movement has done that. And I think it's great we're having a public intellectual, not an activist, but an intellectual on there who is supportive of this.
No, and I think that one of the things that's absolutely critical, and this is why I was really kind of encouraged with Zogby's appointment too as well, and kind of interested to see some of the pressure or kind of like, you know, signaling him out. Because, you know, the issue when we're talking about kind of, you know, the Middle East, but we're talking about Palestinians, but we're talking about Muslims kind of more broadly, their Arab community more broadly. I mean, back in Zogby, right, in 2006, right? I mean, he was personally the target of a whole bunch of anti-Arab threats, right? And at least three men have been convicted and sent to prison because of this. In 1980, his office in Washington, D.C. was firebombed, right? So this is a guy, right, who's been along for a long, like he's been here for a long time and understands even personally, and his staff understands that personally, the real very kind of violent consequences of kind of not dealing with this issue in a forthright way. So, you know, kudos right across the board. Well, listen, we're coming up to a break, and after the break today, Sean and I are going to get into a couple different issues. Number one, like I said at the top of this, was we're going to talk a little about what's going on in the Erie public schools. It's devastating, folks. It's really crazy. And then Sean's going to talk a little bit about recent shakeup that he just found out about that's going on in Harrisburg, especially in the Department of Environmental Protection. So I want to just kind of come back to something to let everybody know before we take our break. So we have our new fundraising site is up on Podbean, right? And we got several different levels of membership, right? You can start as little as you know, the loose change level, right? At $2 a month, right? $2 a month, just kind of kick in and say, hey, look, we like what you're doing. Don't have a lot of money, don't have a lot to spare, but just want to kick in and kind of help you out. Number two, you can go up to $5 a month. You're kind of your member. We have a rabble rouser level, an organizer level, a whole bunch of this stuff, and some kind of swag that you can get, some Raging Chicken Press, and some opportunities actually to come on the podcast, right? So, you know, kind of have your voice right here in the podcast and get that out too as well. Of course, we will thank everybody on the air. So if you, unless you tell us not to, we'll thank everybody on the air to let them know that, you know, they are Raging Chicken Press members. So thank you so much. So after the break, we'll get right into it, see what's going around the state here in Pennsylvania, and some of the crazy attacks on the right wing, and what's happening in the environment again. Oh my God. All right. This is Kevin Mahoney, Raging Chicken Radio. We'll be right back.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. This day in labor history, the year was 1949. That was the day that a shotgun blast broke through a closed window and struck Victor Reuther as he sat reading a newspaper in his living room. Victor, along with his brothers Walter and Roy, were leaders of the United Auto Workers Union, one of the most powerful forces of the 20th century U.S. labor movement. During the 1930s, the three brothers moved to Detroit and became involved in the hard-fought efforts to bring unions to the Motor City. Victor got a job at the Kesley Hayes Wheel Company. He joined UAW Local 174. During the Flint sit-down strike against General Motors, Victor gave speeches to help rally the strikers. According to Mike Smith of Wayne State University, Victor, quote, had this deep resonating voice. He coupled that with a superb control of the language. And when he got up to give a speech, it was usually a beauty. Victor would go on to become the UAW's education director and international director. Roy took up the role of legislative director. Walter became the union's president. Their union leadership made many enemies for the three Reuther brothers. Walter was the victim of a gunshot attack in 1948 that permanently injured one of his arms. The next year, an unknown would-be assassin took aim at Victor. The blast hit Victor in the face. He lost his right eye, and the bullet smashed his jaw and collarbone. In his memoir, Victor wrote that he told the surgeon, quote, "They can take out my eye and take of an arm or a leg, but please fix up my tongue. I've got a living to make." Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
I was standing by gate 4 when I heard the people roar. They ain't gonna kick the auto workers around. It's that UAW-CIO.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney. I am the editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. And before the break, I was telling that we got some things coming up and coming up in Raging Chicken Press. Before we get to that, I want to just give a little plug in. So on June 8th and 9th, it is the 20th anniversary conference for the Keystone Research Center. That's out in Harrisburg. It's going to be a really cool conference this year. So if anybody's interested in doing that, you can go to keystoneresearch.org/20th anniversary. That's 20th anniversary. And the registration form is right there. There's going to be some fantastic speakers. You're going to have kind of a whole bunch of cool workshops on innovative unionism, education skills and budget and tax fairness, closing the gap, 20th century equity and economic security. You're going to have folks from the Restaurant Opportunity Center there, from the Workers Lab, from Jobs for Justice, and they'll be kind of recognizing the longtime work of John Springer, the executive director of PSEA, Barney Orsler from Pittsburgh United, Robin Green Toller from the former KRC board president, and the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley. So if you're interested in that, again, check it out, www.keystoneresearch.org/20th anniversary. All the information will be right there. Check it out. So as we said, in this segment, we want to talk a little bit about some of the things that are going around in the state of Pennsylvania. Yesterday, I was on the Rick Smith Show. For those who are interested, thericksmithshow.com. You can check out all his stuff that it's out there. And we're talking about this story with the public schools out there in Erie, Pennsylvania. And just to want to give you a little bit of preview, I'm going to be writing about this in the coming days. But just to kind of let folks know what is going on, I mean, it's insane. I mean, you've basically got the guy who's the superintendent of the schools, Jay Badham, basically came out and said, look, we've cut everything to the bone, right? We've had these austerity budgets. Harrisburg is not funding our public schools, and Erie's in dire straits. And so as a result, he's got a proposal on the table that to shut down the four high schools in the Erie School District and ship them out to surrounding districts. I mean, it's incredible. Can you just imagine that? The city, this is the fourth largest city in Pennsylvania, shutting down all of its high schools and shipping them out to see if you can find another place for these kids. It's absolutely unbelievable.
You know, I was listening to that interview yesterday, and yeah, it makes the comparison, like, it seems like Erie, Pennsylvania is our Flint, Michigan.
Yeah.
You have this city, old Rust Belt city, that is, you know, halfway, what, between Buffalo and Chicago, along the Great Lake system. It really feels like that is just a forgotten city in Pennsylvania.
Well, that's like, absolutely true. I mean, you think about it like this. I mean, look at this. You talk about it's got a median income. It's got a median income in Erie of $33,000 a year, right? In that school district, right, it is 485th out of 500 school districts, right, in terms of its median income. It's poor. 80% of the students that go to those schools are economically disadvantaged. 20% of those students are in special ed. And they have one of the highest political refugee populations, right, in the state. Right. And you just see this as the intersection of the class warfare that the kind of right wing has been carrying on for years, coupled with kind of the racist politics that you see in so much of kind of Pennsylvania and across this country. And like you said, just kind of it looks like just people want to carve out Erie, Pennsylvania and ship it off into the Great Lakes and forget about it.
I mean, it's out in the middle of nowhere. You know, Pennsylvania is not near Reading. You have Reading and Allentown also. We have a lot of small cities in this state that are just horrible. They're just falling prey to this, to these austerity budgets. You have York, Pennsylvania, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Reading, Allentown. But when it comes to our smaller cities, I don't know what to say.
We're not even talking about the smaller city. I mean, we're talking about the fourth largest city in the state. You know, and frankly, this is the one thing that ever since I've moved to Pennsylvania, this is bothered the shit out of me, right? And the thing is that this is so much attention is paid to Pittsburgh and to Philadelphia, right? Somewhat to Harrisburg, but Pittsburgh and Philadelphia because of the population centers. And this is especially true when it comes to progressives. Progressives want to get in their little bubble around Philadelphia, the little bubbles around Pittsburgh, right? And then just throw the rest of the state away, right? And this is why, again, I'll come right back to the message that John Fetterman kind of led with in his campaign.
There are many small cities in Pennsylvania. They're poor. There's rural poverty going on. I mean, you look at the Fetterman campaign, you look where he did good, you look where Sanders did good. You have two people who are not religious, right? One's a Brooklyn Jew, and the other guy is like 6'9", 450 pounds. And their liberalism speaks in rural Pennsylvania among Democrats because they are going right to the economic issues. There's rural poverty. We are rampant with rural poverty. There's poverty rampant throughout the smaller cities within the state, Johnstown, Altoona, you know, yep. Reading, Allentown, Scranton, Wilkes-Barre. You know, all these cities are devastated, are ran down, and this is the politics that they speak to.
No, and I guess
these are the people, this is where we should be organizing. If we organized across the state, you know, this is like where if the labor movement can get involved here, if the progressive movement get involved here, you can get economic liberalism and populism organized across the state.
Absolutely. And this is exactly why the Fetterman and Sanders campaigns are absolutely so important, because basically, you know, this goes right back. I mean, I've plugged this before on this show, the Thomas Frank's book, Listen Liberal. There's a bunch of other stuff out there that's kind of tracking the history of the Democratic Party, where, you know, the Democratic Party basically left behind the working class a long time ago. And they focus instead on the kind of the cultural elites and the kind of professional class of folks. And that is their kind of main constituency. Even though they require that labor comes out and kind of supports them on the ground and all this kind of stuff. And if we want to actually start kind of winning as progressives, not just kind of winning seats with a D after our name, but actually kind of respond to kind of racial justice, want to respond to economic justice, want to actually lead that particular kind of movement, then we're going to have to kind of change our progressivism. We're going to have to change what it means to kind of be a Democrat, small D Democrat, and a liberal, and going to look into the message that we see right now in the Sanders campaign, like we say, with this Democratic Party platform debate slash fight coming up at the convention. It's going to be really interesting. So I hope that John Fetterman is actually going to stick to and kind of building stuff on the ground here in Pennsylvania.
And you know what the sad thing is? They did well in parts of the state where the Democratic Party, in the Pennsylvania Democratic Party, put no one up to challenge Republicans because of how gerrymandered those states are. They're not even sending the message down there. You know, I think that Pennsylvania needs to adopt a 50-state solution, go a 67-county solution, yeah. Target every seat just to get your message out there and let those people know you are there listening to them and you care.
Yeah, that's the difference between putting the blinders on for just one specific election coming up versus to actually try to build a majority for the long haul. So look for that. We're going to be talking about – I'll be writing about that. I'm going to talk to you some more about what's going on in your public schools. Sean, I also understand that you've got a really interesting story come up. You want to talk a little about that?
Yeah. So last week, the House concurred on the vote for the teacher seniority bill, right? Mm-hmm. House Bill 805, made by Stephen Bloom, which – it originates with the testing regime, students first. Mm-hmm. Basically, what this bill would do would evaluate teachers based on the 2012 metrics that Governor Corbett implemented, which included test policies. And if the teacher is unsatisfactory, it would get rid of seniority, and actually lay those teachers off. There were a bunch of Democrats asking Wolf to sign the bill, and however, they didn't even vote on the bill, which is kind of funny, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. And I want to plug the article that you wrote on that, because you actually published something on Raging Chicken Press about this too as well, kind of looking at what those Democrats did. So for those folks who are interested in that full story, go to RagingChickenPress.org and kind of check Sean's piece out on this kind of stuff. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So now what I'm going to do is the actual journalism behind this bill, and talk to teachers in Philadelphia about the learning conditions that are happening. Since, you know, test scores are socioeconomic are influenced by socioeconomic factors. Teachers, there's a possibility that a lot of teachers in Philadelphia who have been teaching there for 20 or 30 years can get laid off because of the economic conditions their students are coming from. Mm-hmm. And some of the issues that are happening inside the school, they're severely understaffed, severely underfunded. You have to worry about a boiler exploding, stuff like that that's going on. And should these teachers really face the possibility of losing their jobs because of these factors?
Yeah, I find it very interesting. I mean, you know, you and I talked a little bit about this off air, over the past couple of days, is that, you know, you've got These schools, right, are subjected to all sorts of scrutiny when it comes to standardized test scores, right? But there's no assessment whatsoever of those, you know, teaching and learning conditions that you're talking about. I mean, imagine if we actually said, okay, in order to have a successful school, then we'd have to make sure that, you know, like the case that we always hear, Rick Smith always talks about the classrooms that are, you know, snowing on students in Reading, PA, right? I mean, talking about those, you know, that would be unacceptable. But those measures are never even looked at. It's only this kind of, you know, blinders on standardized testing. And, you know, from what we've been talking about, what you share with me at least so far, this is going to be, I think, a pretty big story that people are going to want to pay attention to.
Yeah. You know, I've been able to build up a network of sources within their school teachers inside Philadelphia, and they've done a really awesome job in getting this stuff, blowing the whistle, coming forward to the media. And it's not just me. They'll go to anyone in the Philadelphia media that's willing to get this stuff out. And they've been doing it for so long now where they care about their teaching conditions, and they've had enough.
That's right. You know, and it's similar to what we were just talking about in the last part on Erie with John Fetterman. You know, this is also, I think, encouraging because, you know, we saw the huge campaign for the Caucus of Working Educators that came out of the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers. And they were kind of really pushing for this social movement unionism. And I think they brought to light, began to bring to light what it's actually like to work in those schools and bring some of the issues of kind of justice and equity right to the forefront. So to actually kind of say, okay, look, this is an opportunity for that caucus, right, to continue off their work and really kind of build deep roots in this kind of activist direct action.
And also, movement. I was going to say also my anger for this story, you know, because I do get angry sometimes.
Really?
Yeah. When I'm writing, my motivation for this story comes from the Penn Live editorial that came out in support of this bill. Because they're basic anti-union tropes saying that school unions are extremely powerful in the buildings that they operate in. That's why the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers have gone over 1,000 days without a contract. Basically, Penn Live, in my opinion, only operates to their readers on the West Shore. You know, I don't think any of these writers have stepped into a Harrisburg school to see how deplorable these teaching conditions are. Because if so, I think that would have been a lot different.
No, and this is exactly what we're talking about when
there's a class divide. You know, we're talking about a class divide in Erie. There's a class divide in Harrisburg. As soon as you cross over that bridge into the West Shore, it's like it's upper middle class. It's all white. And those are the main readership. That's the main readership, white upper class people for Penn Live. And that's who the editorial board's catering to.
Yeah, well, and I think that this is what happens too as well when you've got journalists that are kind of really, they do all the reporting within a closed circle, right, of the Capitol building, right? So they're talking only to politicians and only kind of the influential folks. They're not actually putting this in the bigger picture and looking at what the actual conditions are on the ground. So I think about that editorial that you talked about where, you know, you've got Penn Live actually urging, you know, to sign this anti-union bill.
They were duped. They were duped by the students first and the testing regime's language. They were duped by that because they call it the Fair Teacher Act or something.
Well,
like that.
I don't even think they were duped by it. What I think it goes to who they're paying attention to, right? It's like when you're in that closed system, right? Those arguments make sense in this abstract way. They make absolutely no sense when you consider actually what conditions out in the world, like what people are actually doing, what the impact of, you know, a history of policies to attack schools and whether we're talking about Philadelphia, we're talking about Erie, PA. So pretty crazy. So look for that. Sean's got that piece coming up. In the next few days, you're going to see that. My guess is that there's going to be some people that get a little pissed off by that. But that, you know, that's part of what we do here. So the one thing I want to make sure we get in before we have to take a break, Sean, is there's been this little story. You were just telling me about this before we got on the air today. Is a little story about a shakeup in the Department of Environmental Protection. So what's happening there?
Apparently, the only person who's brought the rage to Harrisburg in the Wolf administration has been fired by the Wolf administration last week. This all stems back to a couple weeks ago.
And who is this?
This is the Department of Environmental Protection Secretary, John Quigley. He was asked to step down because he didn't make a little – he was not good at playing politics inside the General Assembly. So this stems back to last year, to the budget, right? Mm-hmm. Inside the fiscal code, tried to delay the implementation of natural gas and drilling regulations, right? This was slipped in there, along with other grift and graft going to the natural gas industry, which doesn't happen in Pennsylvania, but it does. So that was vetoed out this past spring. And right as soon as that was happening, the Republicans were the environmental committees inside the House and Senate were holding hearings to roll back these efforts. And a bunch of Democrats signed on to this, right? Voted for this. One of them was John Yudichek from Scranton, Pennsylvania. He is the minority chair, and he is not an environmental advocate at all. He is someone who is bought and paid for by the fossil fuels industry, and he is someone that is the minority chair of the committee that does that. You think you want to put an advocate there? Mm-hmm. Not the Senate Democrats, or not the Pennsylvania Democratic Party. So there's that. A bunch of Democrats voted for it, voted to roll back these regulations, and Quigley lost his mind. He basically sent a scathing email to a couple environmental groups saying, where the fuck are you? How come you're not in Harrisburg doing this?
Yeah, I should say that this is State Impact Pennsylvania obtained a copy of the email, and they published it online. And this is what he sent to the environmental organizations, right? He starts it by saying, I've slept on this but can no longer hold back. Where the fuck were you people yesterday? The House and Senate hold Russian show trials on vital environmental issues, and there's no pushback from all the environmental community. Nobody bothering to insert themselves in the news cycle? Is there really no penalty, right? I mean, this was unbelievable. This guy was pissed off, and he was pissed off. It was interesting about this, right? Because he was pissed off at the environmental activists, and then somehow this gets used as, at least in this state impact story, they're suggesting that the email is one of the things that led to his resignation.
Yes. So he was pissed off at the environmental organizations because they're fighting over the moratorium still. They're not fighting stuff that's coming up in the legislature. They are single issue groups. They want a moratorium or a ban on fracking, and that's it. And frankly, he's right. I mean, he is correct in this. They have not inserted themselves into the environmental discussion at all because no one's willing to take up the moratorium issue. So most of them have turned their back on this. And I'm sorry, that's just the way I feel about it because they're siloed in their moratorium area. And if it's not about that, they're not there. So what happened was Clean Water Action then launched attack ads against State Senator John Yudichek and other Democrats who voted for these gutting these regulations. Mm-hmm. There was word that this email leaked out within the legislature. I'm assuming that's how it happened because some of these Senate Democrats demand the resignation of Quigley, and Wolf then followed order and pretty much fired him, said, you're done.
This is, I mean, I tell you, I think the implications of this are going to be far reaching in two ways. Like number one,
we're not going to have an environmental advocate leading the DEP. Now we're going to probably get some corporatist there, right? You're probably going to get some natural gas friendly corporate Democrat installed into this thing because the Republicans are going to have to approve him in the Senate.
Right.
Well, and so you're going to lose an advocate. You're not going to get an advocate. It's starting to make you question some of the moves Governor Wolf is making.
Well, and that, what I was going for was the two things I think you're right is, I mean, you know, who's going to get in there? That's going to be kind of important. But the implications I was thinking about in particular, like, were number one, right? You know, one of the things that Quigley kind of put on the table there is a question of how we do politics as a movement, right? I mean, so how actually one acts as a movement, right? Do we just kind of get in this kind of purity position where it's only going to be this thing, it's my way or the highway, or do we have to kind of engage in the process? And right, this is some of the same kinds of questions that we see coming out of the Bernie Sanders campaign, like, you know, when they're the Bernie or bust people. Well, you know, okay, you can take your toys and go home, but what does it mean to actually to push hard and bring about real change? That's the first part. And then the second part is now you've got what could potentially be some distancing of progressives from the Wolf administration once this gets reported out a little bit more. I mean, I think there's got a lot of reporting that's got to go on yet before we actually, you know, kind of dig into what's going on here. But that's, you know, that could potentially hurt Wolf in the long run.
And I know that there's a lot of discontent within the Department of Environmental Protection itself. Just from talking to employees there, it's not a great place to be working at there right now. And a lot of people these are people that live, I am community members with, you know, like I talk to a lot of the bureaucrats in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, you know, because they're my neighbors. There are people I see at the gym and there are people I see at the bar, and they're not pleased with the Wolf administration's handling of the natural gas, of natural gas drilling in Pennsylvania. These are people working within the DEP as your foot soldiers, as your mid-level managers and stuff like that. They are not happy about what's happening to the environment in Pennsylvania. And that's also coming out from the there's also more discontent within the DEP than just Quigley.
Yeah, I tell you, this has been a sleeper issue for a while. I mean, sleeper, no one's paying attention whatsoever, but it's been really kind of sidelined a bit. But I think that we might really see this as kind of one of the key fights going forward about what we do with natural gas stuff and what goes on from there. Anyways, we're coming up right to a break. And when we come back, you know, we're just going to wrap it up a little bit, kind of see what's happening here, get a little preview into, I don't know, the future of Sean's dress code at work. I don't know. Whatever. But we'll come back right after this.
With beer recommendation.
Yeah, beer recommendation. You could also do that. That'd be also a good one. All right, we'll come right back with a few things after this break. This is Kevin Mahoney. This is Out to Coop Podcast from Raging Chicken Radio. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Kevin Mahoney, the editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. In just 5 short years, we've helped bring unapologetic, progressive, activist media to Pennsylvania and beyond. I started Raging Chicken in the wake of assaults on working people, women, and all things public following sweeping right-wing electoral victories in 2010. Since then, we've done our best to hold those in power accountable and refuse to pull punches. We've broken national stories and established a reputation as an aggressive citizen media site. Our goal now is to make Raging Chicken Press sustainable. That means raising enough money to actually pay our contributors and grow our operations. As newsrooms close and traditional journalists lose their jobs, hard-hitting investigative news suffers. If we care about our democracy, we have to find new sustainable models of journalism. And frankly, no one's going to do it for us. So I'm asking you to take a minute to become a member of Raging Chicken Press. For as little as $5 a month, you can help keep us going and support homegrown progressive journalists and media activists. For the price of a good beer or a cup of coffee once a month, you can make a huge difference. Go to RagingChickenPress.org and click on the Support and Membership tab to become a member, leave a one-time donation, or learn about other ways that you can help. We don't have billionaires to fund our operations. Keeping progressive activist media going strong depends on you. Thank you for all your help and support. Keep up the fight.
Welcome back to Out to Coop Podcast, a project of Raging Chicken Radio. I'm Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, and we're going to close things out today a little bit. And it's been a big day, I have to say. So, Sean, I understand. I mean, you've been, you know, hardworking, kind of lugging kegs, pouring beer, all that kind of stuff. And if I understand, you got a little vacation coming up, right?
Yep.
So, take a little R&R. Where are you going? Like down the shore?
No, a couple weeks I'll be going out to Colorado.
Colorado.
Boulder, to be exact, for a few nights. We're going to Boulder, Yellowstone, Devil's Tower, Denver, and the Grand Tetons.
So, I guess you like Colorado, right? You were there before.
No, I've never been to Colorado.
Oh, you've never been to Colorado?
No. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to the beer.
Well, Boulder is, like, you know, that's one of the hot spots for craft beer, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was getting in contact with some breweries out there, telling them where I work, what I do, telling them I'm bringing some crowlers out with me.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I'll bring them to the brewery if you guys are interested. And they said, heck yeah, we want some Pizza Boy stuff. So I'm going to be bringing some crowlers out there with me. And then, it's kind of like I scratch your back, scratch my back in return.
Yeah.
So maybe I can get some free beer out of that.
Oh, that's awesome. So, you know, Sean and I were talking a little bit about this on the break, and we may actually try to do an on-location kind of extra special on-location interview with Sean out there, just to kind of see how things are going out there in Boulder. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to trying the budding industries out there.
Oh, you mean the construction, right? A lot of construction.
Yeah, there's a lot of construction going on out there.
Hemp is a very strong fiber.
But no, there's, I mean, hey, when in Rome.
Yeah, when in Rome. Well, we might also, I mean, you, for longtime listeners or longtime actually readers of Raging Chicken Press, you know, Sean has done a whole lot of reporting on kind of the medical marijuana issue in Pennsylvania and so on. Has been covering that for kind of quite some time. And so one of the things that we're probably going to do, if we can swing this, we're going to actually pre-record a show for the week that Sean is away, to talk a little bit about the kind of not just the medical marijuana, but the legalization fight and so on like that. So, I mean, Colorado is one of those states that has legalized all marijuana now, or how's that work?
Yes, it's all, so basically everything's legalized out there. All recreational use is legalized. You are capped off at a certain limits per day. Mm-hmm. So I think people in state can buy up to like an ounce at a time, but people out of state can only buy up to maybe like an eighth or something. Mm-hmm. It's not a lot. So there's limits on that, because obviously you don't want people smuggling drugs across borders, because that's
absolutely
still
right.
Very illegal. It's like trying to bring alcohol into Pennsylvania, but on a little bit of a larger scale. It's going to be interesting to see just how it's set up. Obviously, we have our state store system here in Pennsylvania. We're, again, our election season's coming up. It seems like three or four more states this year are going to legalize it recreationally. We're going to have our first East Coast state legalize it recreationally. It might be Massachusetts or Vermont. It's going to be really interesting. I feel like the dominoes are starting to fall on this issue, and it's going to be interesting seeing how that is up out there, seeing what other states are going to be doing and how it's going to be modeled, because it's going to be an issue that is overdue. I mean, yes, it's a narcotic, it's a drug. It's going to be regulated. It's going to close down the black market, and it will take. And the state will be profiting off of it.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting. You know, I have to say, is like I've known kind of quite a few people have actually now who've kind of gone out to Colorado as, you know, because of this, right? Because, you know, they're all like, hey, man, it's cool. It's pot's free and, or not free. Pot's legal. We go out there. But it's kind of created this little tourist industry, right? I mean, even though they're not broadcasting it like that. So that's kind of interesting. So we'll preview that a little bit for there. The week that Sean's away is also going to be the big primary day. So so I'll be here talking a little about the primary day too as well. But we'll try to get that segment in with Sean. Just a little bit preview of his Colorado trip, and then hopefully we'll get him on location there too as well. So last night at exactly 12:17 a.m., I get this message that says, "I finished a growler." Right. And that is, yes, as you can tell by his laugh, and that was from Sean. Right, I finished a growler. So I thought it was only appropriate, right, the way to close out today, as to ask Sean for a little beer recommendation. Sean, so as you're kind of English muffining and coffeeing off your growler, you got a beer recommendation for us today?
Yes. Quite conveniently is the beer that I was drinking last night. Marin River by Pizza Boy. If you are in Allentown, Philadelphia, or the Pittsburgh distribution markets, also central Pennsylvania and northeastern PA, you can find Marin River by Pizza Boy through your local wholesalers. It'll be draft only, but it's been the best selling beer at the brewery for the past 10 months now.
So what kind of beer is it?
It's a IPA. It takes on that newer New England style of beer where it's very hazy. It's a citrus forward, like very citrusy IPA. Still has some nice bitterness to it, but it's going to be more of a tropical fruit. And it's the new trend with the IPA movement. It seems like Pennsylvania has been popping out a lot of crazy beers lately. And it just seems like everyone, it's not just good IPAs anymore. It's people that are pumping out ridiculously good IPAs. And it seems like there's just an arms race going on right now.
So Marin River, you said this will only be available on draft?
Yes.
All right, so maybe what I'm going to do is I'm going to see if I can kind of find it in some locations around there. Maybe we can post it up in the show notes today, at least put a plug in for it. So
yeah, and maybe when you come up to Harrisburg next week, you can get yourself a crowler or three of it.
Or three of it.
No, but actually something that was really funny.
Yeah, so everybody's out. I'm probably going to be out in Harrisburg this Thursday. So I'm doing some business, going to meet up with my good friend Rick Smith. He and I are going to be talking about, again, building that progressive media network and so on. So if anybody's out there, you want to get together, want to say hey, let me know.
I also want to finish off saying I actually had a really funny encounter with someone over the weekend. I'm on Facebook. I'm in a couple of beer trading groups. Again, completely different topic for discussion later on, different point. But, I recognized two people sitting at the bar, and they were from South Carolina and West Virginia. And we're talking, and they settled up their check, and they got a few crowlers to go to take on the trip back to them. And I said, hey, since I just poured you this crowler of this IPA I told you to get, you weren't even drinking. Here's a quick sample of it. So I gave them the sample at their table. They sniffed it, and they stayed for another 2.5 hours drinking nothing but this beer. There's a hotel. There's literally like two hotels right across the street from us, just because it's a technology park way. It brings in a lot of business people. Mm-hmm. The new hospital is up there. Penn Live is over there. So there's always people coming in and out of those hotels just for that. Just for these corporate parks in the area. So they booked a hotel, and the guys were like, listen, I could have been back in Harpers Ferry, West Virginia by now, but because of you, I'm booking a hotel. And I just drank three more pints of beer. And it was this Marin River Pizza Boy IPA. And they are friends of people I knew, and we were hanging out talking for a bit. So it's actually pretty fun. Like, there's people you just know online, and then you meet them face to face.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So there's your beer recommendation for Marin River from Pizza Boy. Try to get out there. And what markets is it in again, just to double that down?
It should be in the Pittsburgh, where the Pizza Boy is now just distributing out in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, Allentown, Reading, Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, and Philadelphia. And obviously Central Pennsylvania.
And Allentown. Don't forget Allentown. I love Allentown. All right. So this is we're going to close it out here at Out the Coop podcast. Thank you, Sean Kitchen, for joining us once again.
You're welcome.
And we will be back next week with another episode. Remember, kind of stay tuned after this episode drops. We're also going to drop the next episode of The Sit Down with Amy Lynch Binyak, talking about labor issues and higher education. All right. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. This is Out the Coop podcast. We're signing out. See ya.